You're listening to the Fedora Chronicles radio show, recorded for March 5th, 2010. Hey folks, I have a special guest here this week. Once again, we have John Penman from Penman Hats. John, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Eric?
I'm doing okay. I had a really busy day, which we'll get to the end of the show. Right off the bat, why don't you start with telling us what's new with Penman Hats?
Well, I got a few things that I'm working on. I'm working on Monte Cristo's Panama hats, trying to get that line off the ground. I'm going to start with one style, like a sea crown, that I'll keep in stock, that'll be readily available with maybe 2 to 4 week turnaround time. And if there's any other styles that customers would want, I could get them, but they would be on a custom order basis and probably would take about 2 to 3 months. I'm working on trying to get off the ground a ladies line of hats that I'm working with, Alice, the curator of the Hat Museum here in Portland. And hopefully we can do some custom creations, one-time creations from Alice. And then we're also going to do a standard offer. We're going to start with the one particular style that we're currently working on right now to get the ladies' hats launched. And we'll have a whole series of hat boxes to go with that as well. And those are the two biggest things that are up and coming.
Another thing that I'm not sure that we talked about during the last radio show, but I'm sure it's kind of happened relatively recently. You have actually an off-site workshop where you're now making the hats. Is that correct?
Yeah. I opened up the shop in August. So this way I'd have more space and people have better access to me. And it's, you know, helped out production a lot. And it's really nice to have a place that I can separate from and walk away from and unplug. So this way I can have my sanity and not turn into the Mad Hatter and come back and do good work.
Excellent. Now, it's actually made things a lot easier for you, obviously, for having a place to go that's away from home. For people who don't know, how much different is it to actually have a place to work outside of your house?
Well, it's nice. Like I said, you can unplug, and I can walk away from it and have my private life private, and I can have my work life, you know, hat making life there. So there's negatives and pluses. One, I have a lot more space, and I don't have to set up and break down. I have, you know, a section for every little process of making hats. I got more storage space, more space for everything. But the downside is that I don't have access to it 24 hours around the clock like I used to, because here it is, if my back was keeping me up at night, I'd go down and I'd do some sewing or something like that. And so this way I can always do a little bit of work. But there's a negative to having work right at your fingertips is that you constantly working and you can't unplug it. So that's the benefit of having the shop.
Is it speeding up the process to have an offsite facility, though?
Yes, it does, because I don't have to set up and clean up every day. I have a pouncing section, I have an ironing section, I have a sewing section, I have a blocking section, I have a section to cut down brims. I have all the space and everything, so I don't have to clean up to make room to do others. I can branch out and have multiple hats running at the same time. So in that case, it does speed things up a little bit. So yeah, it's very beneficial.
That's awesome. In the event that there's any of us who are listening who are in the area, you think we could drop by and say hello in your
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I do run out from time to time to run errands to ship out hats and products, and so I would advise to drop me a line first to set up a time frame. You don't have to narrow it down real tight, but just give me a time frame to make sure I'm there. But yeah, I'm more than happy to have people, and people have been dropping over, coming down from Seattle, Washington, up from California, and popping in on me. So yeah, it's really nice to see people.
Moving along, John, we actually have questions from the Electric Speakeasy, and we titled this 7 Questions for John Penman, but I think we got more than 7. Let's tackle the first one from Blackthorn, if you don't mind. He asks, how many friends did you lose on 9/11, and can you tell us about them? I know it's off the subject from making hats, but if you wanted to take a minute.
Yeah, well, I'm originally from New York, and I knew a bunch of guys back there, got hired in FDNY. I knew a bunch of guys from Rescue 1. A few of them got promoted and left, Captain, not Captain, BC Battalion Chief John Moran. I knew him as a captain at Rescue One, but he became a BC. He died in 9/11. Captain Hatton died there that I knew, but the one I knew the closest and was closest to me was to Patty O'Keefe, who was still with Rescue One at the time. I would say I knew about socially about 11 guys who died, but a couple of them really well, like Patty was really close to me, and I'd see him almost on a daily basis, or I should say every couple of days because of the shifts and everything like that, because his station was down the block where I lived and where I was training people. I was a fitness trainer just down the block from Rescue One, and that's kind of how I met him and some of the guys, and they were really good guys. They were very generous with themselves, good with their time. They were very encouraging and helpful for me to get through all the process of the New York Fire Department. It's the hardest department in the country to get into, and they were very supportive and helpful and decent human beings, and they left wives and children behind, and I miss all of them.
Well, is it difficult for you to talk about it still?
A little bit. I don't know. I have to say I'm still a little bit angry. I know it's been quite a few years since it happened, but it's a hard thing to those guys to have it taken way before their time, and some aspects of it I'll talk about, and some I won't. But overall, it's still kind of an open wound.
Okay. All right. Well, on that note, moving on to hats, moving back to hats, Super Ordinary Guy asks, being a person who has never owned a beaver hat, could you describe what the difference is between rabbit and beaver?
Well, you have to look at the two animals. You know, when the weather gets bad, it starts to rain and stuff like that, just thinking about how the two animals react. The rabbit will go hide in a hole, and the beaver will go out and play. So the fur on the beaver is set up to handle water a lot better. I mean, they don't feel the water when they're out there swimming and playing, and so their coat is geared to repel and handle it. So it's a much better cold weather, element hat. The beaver is not as it's a lot more dense. It doesn't have as much air as the rabbit does, and the rabbit hair is a little coarser. So of course, like Super Ordinary Guy said, it is a softer and smoother finish to the beaver that you can get out of the pounce job. But the other thing is too is it's denser and it's better for the elements.
Let's just go to Rick's question here real quick. How does someone go from, man, I really love hats, to I think I can build my own? And then Rick follows up by saying, this is coming from a guy who can barely change a light bulb without breaking a hip. Love your hats, John. So.
Well, that's a good question. I wish I had a really good answer for that. I just loved hats for, I don't know, 20-some-odd years. Humphrey Bogart's, a big fan of him in the movies of the era, and then Raiders hat, and it was just kind of a frustration of trying to find these hats and not happy with them, and just wanting to define the hat, and finding that hat finally, which was an adventure-built Raiders hat from Steve Delk. And then I finally saw the quality that I was looking for and the attention to detail. And I'm type of a curious person. When I get into something, I'm not only happy, I'm not just happy with, hey, I like that certain subject or certain thing. But I want to know how it's made, the origin of it, how it got to from point A to point B and all the way to modern times. So I'm just that type of natural curious person. So I think with the two things together, it just kind of made me go from loving hats to, making my own. And what's the best way to learn how things are put together than to do it yourself?
Yeah. Were you a craftsman at all before you started making hats?
I don't know. I always had a little bit of an artistic side to me. So I guess maybe this is part of that side coming out. So I don't know how much of a craftsman I was before this, but I definitely had an artistic side to me that needed to get out. And I think it's finally with the hats are coming.
And a lot of people who look at the Electric Speakeasy fedora that I wear everywhere now, everybody insists, who knows hats, cannot believe that you've only been doing this for a couple of years. How do you respond to that? I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot.
No, that's okay. No, it's nice to hear. I mean, it's nice to hear. I've heard from a lot of people saying that, you know, my learning curve is, I've learned really quick, and I feel that, you know, that I definitely have come a quite a far ways in a short period of time. But I've had, like I said in, I think, the first interview with you, that I've had a lot of help from Steve Delk and Mark Kidder from Adventure Belt, and I think half of that you see is their help.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think I'd be making half the hat if it wasn't for those two gentlemen.
That's phenomenal. Which brings me to the next question from our good friend Kevin. How do you pounce a hat?
How do I pounce a hat? Well, I'll talk about part of it, because a couple things that I do that I don't know anyone else does, and I'd like to keep that to myself. But most people pounce a hat using various grit of sandpaper. There's a couple other things I use besides the sandpaper to get a nice smooth finish. But it's usually, you know, levels of sandpaper. You're going from lower grit. So the lower the number, the coarser the grit, the larger the number. Let's say 320 grit sandpaper is finer than 200. So you're going to move yourself up and everything and take less and less hair off the raw body. So you start at one level and you move up. That's usually, and you have to pounce. I just got that thought just popped in my head. You have to pounce in the direction that in one certain direction, just the same way that you're told to brush a hat. You want to pounce the hat the same way. You're pouncing the hat counterclockwise on the top of the hat, and then the underside you're pouncing clockwise.
Okay.
You're following a pattern.
Okay. But there are other aspects to the process that you just cannot divulge because it's a trade secret.
Yeah, well, it's my little trade secret, yes.
Okay. Because from what I can tell, the way that you pounce the hat, and I hope I'm not giving anything away here. Well, I don't think that's possible. But the way that you pounce the rabbit hat makes the rabbit look almost just like beaver felt.
Oh, it's always been my I'm a bit of a snob when it comes to hats. I really like the beaver felt. I really like the smooth, soft feeling. Once you get a really good pounced beaver hat, it's almost hard to go to rabbit. So it's always been my, always in the back of my head is trying to find a technique to make the rabbit felt feel as smooth as possible to get it into the ballpark near beaver. And it's almost impossible to do it, but you're always trying to. I mean, you can tell as soon as you pick it up, but you want to kind of give it the best finish you possibly can. It's always been mine to experiment and to challenge myself to get better and better at every aspect of hat making, and the pounce is a big part of it.
Yeah, it really there's just something to a perfectly well-pounced hat that you just cannot imagine. Like, I picked up a poorly made fedora today that really had a horrible pounce job, and you could tell right away. And just the way that it feels underneath, in the fingertips, there's just something, and it's like, I'm not articulate enough right now to describe what it's like, but it's something that's customers really appreciate it if they know their hats. So with that, I'm going to move on to the next question here from David G. Here's a tough one. Are you making a profit from your business yet? And if you are, how long did it take for you to reach that point?
The business is making a profit, yes. I'm not seeing that profit as of yet, but yeah, the business is making a profit. At what point I started, I think my accountant could answer that question a lot better than I could.
Would she like to be on a podcast?
Yes. I need to call her up and ask her to sit down, with me, and you can interview her.
Well,
I don't know what point she would know best. All I know is that here it is, as I'm trying to branch out and do different type of hats and to improve on every aspect of hat making and the accessories that I went out to get, because I wanted to have accessories that like hat boxes and brushes and stands and water repellent. I wanted, here it is, if you're buying a high-end custom handmade hat, you should have the other parts too, with the accessories that also high quality, high end. So that was it took a lot to get that off the ground, and so that profit goes back into the business.
Excellent. Excellent. Moving away from the questions here, I want to play a sound for you. It's not actually playing a sound, but I'm going to try and do this sound live, which will segue perfectly with what I want to talk to you next. Tell me if you can tell what this sound is. Do you know what that sound is?
No,
I don't know what this is. All right. Because I have
The only thing I can think of is it could be my
house. Hey! Yeah.
That just dawned on me. Sound like you were rubbing the top, the part of the hat box there, the fabric.
I was actually taking the lid off the hat box, which I just picked up today. I paid a visit over to Sarah's Hat Box here in New Hampshire. And the question I have to ask you is, how did you find these wonderful characters?
Well, like I was saying earlier, that I wasn't, here it is, when I was buying hats, before I was making hats, you know, I always found it frustrating. You'd find a really nice hat, and if you wanted the products to take care of it or to store it or to travel with it, it was kind of hard to find those. It was almost just as tough as a search as finding the hat. And so I said I wanted to make sure that my customers didn't have that feeling when they came to the Penman Hat Company, that they could have a box to store it in or to travel with. They'd have a brush to take care of it, a water repellent to protect it, a hat stand to display it, or like my hat retainer called the jack stand. I wanted to have all those things in one place, kind of a one-stop shopping for hat care. And so it was a big search to try to find the right hat box. And what I came across was a Western-style cardboard box is what most people were shipping their hats out in. And then if I did find a vintage-style, round, classic hat box, it was made out of cardboard. It was flimsy, and it was very expensive. You had to buy a huge amount of stock. I didn't have the room to store it, and it cost unbelievable amount of money, more almost as much as it is the box itself, just to ship it to me, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. was going to push the price way out of whack. So I kept searching and searching and searching, and it took me months, I mean close to a year, to finally find Sarah's Hat Box and Peter. And I talked to him, and long story short, we were talking on the phone, and we hit it off really well, and I felt like I made like a lifelong friend with Peter. And he asked me my website, and he wanted to look at my website and know about the hat company, and he was talking to me, asking me questions, and he simply said, he goes, send me out your logo. And I sent an email and a logo. He goes, I'm going to send you out a gift. And he says, don't open it until you get on, till you call me. And so he sent me this package, and I call him up, and I open up the package when I'm on the phone with him. And I lucky I was sitting down, because I gasped, because the box was so beautiful. He did such a great job, and he knocked my socks off. And he says, that's a gift. I just want you to live with it. And I asked him how much. He goes, I'm not going to tell you, say anything. I just live with it. Enjoy it. And I did. And when I talked to him, and I didn't have to have a huge minimum amount with him. He says, I'm going to help you out since you're new in the business. And so he helped me out. And now I'm packaging all my hats, go out in those hat boxes, part of the Penman Hat Company now. So if you buy whether it's a rabbit hat or a Penman or a beaver hat, or if you buy an eventually built factory hat, the Henry, they all go out in a hat box made by the Sarah Hat Box by Peter and his family. It's a family run business. It's a mom and pop that's still around, which is really nice to have something like that. It's they have a personal touch, which you don't have nowadays anymore. And I, like I said, I feel like I made a lifelong friend as well as a business associate, and it's really easy to do business with Sarah's Hat Box, and he makes high quality stuff. It's all high quality, a lot of attention to detail. It's like no other hat box I've ever seen or come across, vintage or new. It is, you know, when it comes to a classic round hat box, and he does oval shapes, and he does different fabrics. So, you know, I have a leather like that I send out with my beaver hats. I have a bengaline, which is kind of like a hard corduroy, kind of resembles the hat ribbon. And I have a weaver's cloth that I'm going to be using for my Panama hats, and we're using a weaver cloth for the Adventure Belt Henry hats that grow out as well. So it's been fantastic working with him in Sarah's Hat Box, and you know, it's just like the hats. Until you see it in person, you don't really get to appreciate it. I mean, you just got to see one yourself. I mean, what do you think?
Well, now I have two hat boxes because I have the original Penman hat box that the Electric Speakeasy Fedora first came home with. And then it's like I have the Electric Speakeasy box that I have. And they're both – they have two different fabrics. They have two different coverings. And it's amazing to see the first box with your Penman logo. That is pretty cool. But then to have something that I created – the Fedora Chronicles Electric Speakeasy logo, and see that on a quality box, it is actually quite humbling. And they have a showroom that if you are a hat collector and you need a place to put your hats, this place is like heaven. The store is immaculate, and the quality of the products that they have, any pattern or any design that you can think of or come up with. I mean, they'll actually work with you, from what I understand, to put anything on a hat box. So, I mean, it is just phenomenal. And we're going to have them in a radio show sometime in the very near future. So so to kind of wrap this up, John, what do you think is in the future for hat making? Or what's in the future for Penman hats, and besides what you had already mentioned earlier in the show?
I don't know what the future of hats. I hope the future of hats is that more and more people are going to be wearing them, and we can bring, you know, I don't know if we're going to be back to where we once were, where every man wore a hat. But it looks like it's in an upswing where more and more people are starting to notice and wear fedoras. As for the Penman Hat Company, other than the Monte Cristo Panama hats that I'll be working on, and the hats hopefully that I get off the ground with the Alice, the ladies line. Right now it's just to be more proficient with what I'm doing. I'm working on a couple of tools that were once lost to implement them, to be more precise on every little thing that I do to make it a lot more easier for me to be consistent and put out the quality that I've always been putting out, and to improve where I can improve. But right now, I think those are the two main things I'm going to be working on to get off the ground, and those are going to be two big ones.
That's great. And have you seen the TV show on the Sci-Fi Channel, Caprica? Because everybody seems to be wearing hats on this science fiction show. Have you seen Caprica yet? And you think it's helping your sales any?
No, I haven't. I don't even know about the show. I've been too busy. You know, the boss won't let me out of the cave to go watch TV. I'm too busy making hats. I got a little over a 5 month wait list, and so I've been focusing on trying to, you know, kill that list. But it keeps growing, and I guess I'm gonna have to check out that show and look at those hats. Yeah. I think the biggest thing that helps out sales is any celebrity that wears a fedora, and of course Indiana Jones, because I think he's kept the fedoras alive for many, many years.
Yep. All right. So before we wrap this up and say a seal till next time, what's the best way that folks can get in touch with you?
They can either go to my website, penmanhats.com. They can get my email address from there. They can get my phone number from there. They can get my address to my shop from there, and they could, of course, contact me at the FedoraChronicles.com, the forum.
Thank you. Thank you very much, John. So we're going to have to do this again next time. We're going to have to do this again real soon.
Oh.
All right.
My pleasure.
All right. Thanks again, John.
You're welcome. My pleasure. A rubber band, man, just a rubber band, man.